You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's Wednesday here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We've got a special guest today, Kevin Ostreicher of the Locked On Ravens podcast. He's going to talk about what Patrick Queen meant to the Ravens and what the Steelers are getting in their new leading linebacker. That and a lot more here on the North Shore Drive podcast today. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports, from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the North Shore Drive podcast. Look at me managing all my jobs. But the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Kevin Ostreicher here from Locked On Ravens. It's going to be a fun conversation. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoyed. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as the daily episodes that come out from all of our different sports writers. Yesterday, we had Brian Batko doing his football talk with a Bears guest who gave us some insights on Justin Fields. Go to that episode for a lot more here. As always, you can find the show here. And as always, this show is sponsored by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar today, you can experience 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And you can, and they're always switching new ones in and out, so you'll never run out of new experiences when you go to Mike's Beer Bar. They have over 20 televisions, and they're the perfect place to watch March Madness and root on, especially the Duquesne Dukes, who get to take on BYU this weekend. So, and Mike of Mike's Beer Bar is a big Duquesne Dukes fan. So go down to Mike's Beer Bar today when you want to root on the Dukes. And when you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Well, like I said before, we're joined by my friend Kevin Ostreicher. Kevin and I have done shows together for years of the Locked On Podcast Network. That's why I flinched and said Locked On at the beginning. But Kevin, we got to talk about Patrick Queen, because Patrick Queen was one of those guys, like when the Ravens drafted it, I'm like, that feels like a Steeler. And just like back when he was coming out, I was like, that guy fits a lot of the things that the Steelers needed right when they needed them. When you go back to the 2020 NFL draft, granted, the Steelers thought they had something in Devin Bush, didn't work out then, but now he is a Steeler through free agency. When you looked at the numbers that Patrick Queen was getting paid, did you feel like the Steelers overpaid, or was that like the value that kind of forced him out of Baltimore because of Roquan Smith's contract?
I definitely think, Chris, that Baltimore, based off of them already paying Roquan Smith $100 million, they could not justify, especially with Lamar Jackson now being on his big contract, paying two inside linebackers. Now, in terms of the Steelers and the value they got for Patrick Queen, I actually anticipated Queen to get a lot more than he ended up getting on the market. 3 years, $41 million. You know, right around just under $15 million per season. But still, I think that, you know, a lot of places had him valued at $70 million total, $80 million. I saw Spellotrack had him at about $92. But the inside linebacker market really didn't play out the way a lot of people thought this offseason. It was a lot cheaper for the players in terms of getting money they thought was going to be there. It just wasn't there. So I think the Steelers are getting a really quality player in Patrick Queen. And the price, to me, I thought it was a bargain for what I expected Patrick Queen to actually get on the open market. Patrick Queen wasn't expected to come back to Baltimore for the reasons I mentioned with Roquan, but I think a lot of people were kind of shocked that the money was so low. And obviously here in Baltimore, the other shock was that he actually, you know, flipped over to the other side of the rivalry with the Steelers.
I think that's the interesting thing too, because he made a kind of like a funny, like tongue in cheek comment back in, if you go back to this season, he talked about the Steelers and Mike Tomlin and things. But now you see Patrick Queen in a position where he's going to be the leading linebacker. They love the Landon Roberts from last year. They're hoping Cole Holcomb can come back and be healthy this year. But now you're going to see Patrick Queen as the undisputed leader. And he kind of was for the Ravens before Roquan Smith, right? What did he bring to the table as a young Ravens linebacker? And how did you see him evolve in his time in Baltimore?
Yeah, definitely an evolution process for Patrick Queen. He came into the league, obviously the 28th pick in 2020. And he didn't necessarily have a ton of experience at LSU in terms of just consistently being on the field and playing in a big role. Now, obviously, he was great there when he played, but to me, when he was drafted, it was always going to be a bit of a slow curve up to where he is now. So first couple of years in the league, he did struggle at times, showed flashes, but struggled sometimes getting in the right place, sometimes struggled getting off of blocks and making sure that he was available in coverage. It was a bit of a struggle as well. So there were some growing pains, some definite ups and downs. And an underrated aspect of that whole thing, Chris, is honestly for the 2020 draft class, that wasn't a normal year for the rookies, where that was the COVID year and they didn't have in-person offseason. So for Patrick Queen, him coming into the league, he didn't get to work with his coaches in person. He didn't get to meet his teammates in person for a long time. It was all those virtual workouts and coming in and the crazy things that happened with that. So on top of already being a guy that was going to need a bit of time to develop, he also didn't have the resources available to him early on in his career. So then he moved to year three, and that's where Patrick Queen last season in 2022 really started to hit his stride, especially earlier in the season. But then the Ravens bring in Roquan Smith, and he elevated everybody. It wasn't just Patrick Queen. He elevated everybody on that Ravens defense. But I think that that helped the maturation process and just the overall evolution on the field for Patrick Queen, where he started to just play a lot more confidently. I think an issue for him in his first couple of years was him being hesitant in some ways, not trusting in his ability. And I think for Roquan, he comes in there and he just plays with his hair on fire 24/7. And so Patrick Queen emulated some of that. And you see when he is confident and he is shooting those gaps effectively, whether it be blitzing up the middle, shooting run gaps, he is that much better of a player. So we saw that in year four as well, just a continued upward trend. And he was a second-team All-Pro last year, well-deserved. And it's rare that a second-team All-Pro hits the market like that and gets a lesser deal like Pittsburgh gave him. Again, you're getting a great player at a great price if you're Pittsburgh. And the Ravens have contingency plans. They understood this was probably going to happen, especially after declining that fifth-year option. But still, you can't sugarcoat that the Ravens are losing a good player here.
And I think that's the thing that the Steelers, you know, taking one away from the Ravens is just is pretty valuable. But so is getting a linebacker that fixes the Steelers problem. And the Steelers have been looking for this guy for years since Ryan Shazier was paralyzed in 2017 and his career was ended short. The Steelers 2018, they tried John Bostic. That didn't work. They drafted Devin Bush in 2019. It looked like it did work for about a season and a half. And then he came back from his injury and was never the same again. And then they tried last year. They even got three decent veteran linebackers. Two of them went out for the season. One of them ended the season like on a super strange shoulder. So now you're sitting there and you're saying, dang, like you need options. Well, the thing is about Patrick Queen, he's 24 right now. He'll be 25, I believe, when the league starts in September. So he's gonna be in his youth, in his prime. There's gonna be some 24-year-olds coming out the draft this year in the linebacker class. So like, the Steelers are getting an experienced, athletic guy in the middle part of their defense at a spot that they desperately needed to address for years. And it all appearances seem to suggest that Patrick Queen, he's not being overhyped, he's not being overpaid. He's very much the guy that they kind of need right there. He's not going to be the best linebacker in football, but he's going to be one of the better ones.
Yeah, I think that, again, if you're Pittsburgh, you already know how good your defense is. Now it's just about filling in the pieces, and it's not like you paid Patrick Queen $100 million. You still have some avenues to explore in terms of continuing to address the defensive side of the ball, obviously with the quarterback turnover there and what's the receiver position going to look like with Deontay Johnson now out of the fold. So there are avenues for the Steelers to improve here. But with Patrick Queen, that is an evolution to the linebacker room where you're right. Ever since Ryan Shazier, they've been looking for that guy. Now the question for Patrick Queen is, with him, quote unquote, stepping out of Roquan Smith's shadow. That's the conversation. Is he willing and ready? He's certainly willing, but is he ready to lead this defense? Now, obviously, there are already leaders on it, right? TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and Minkah Fitzpatrick. Those guys have been there and they are the unquestioned leaders. But in terms of being the middle of the defense, this is going to be Patrick Queen's defense. And he has that experience. Obviously, before Roquan came in, he was thrust into that role as being the middle of the defense for the Ravens. But then Roquan came in and those two worked in tandem together. So Queen is, again, unquestionably the best inside linebacker on Pittsburgh right now. And we're going to see how it all pans out. But I do think that this is a major upgrade for the Steelers. And middle linebacker, I think that we talk about running backs and how that position is devalued. I think middle linebacker has kind of become a bit devalued as well, especially with the evolution of box safeties and moving guys all around. So the art of a pure middle linebacker has become a bit lost. But Patrick Queen is still certainly a good one. And I think Pittsburgh, again, got a really good player here.
I think so, too. I want to talk about another guy that the Steelers got that's also a former Raven. Deshaun Elliott will do that and talk about the AFC North here on the other side of this next break of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Kevin Ostreicher. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, you're going to get to experience the best bar. When I mean that, it's because you go in there, and if you love beer, you're never going to run out of options. There are 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap, and every single day they're swapping new ones in and out. When I go there and I'm setting up for shows in the morning, when we do our shows there live there, we'll also be doing a live NFL draft show there come the NFL draft, so stay tuned for that and be sure to attend with us. But when we do that, when I go in there, I'm seeing the bartenders, the waiters, the waitresses. They're replacing the menus because they always got new beers coming in, whether it's stouts, Hefeweizens, IPAs, pale ales. They love their beer there, and you're going to love the beer there too. They also have over 20 televisions. You can even book a table with a television reserved to your specific game. So again, if you're going in for March Madness and you're trying to watch them Duquesne Dukes with a bunch of other Duquesne Dukes fans, best place to go is Mike's Beer Bar if you can't get all the way to Omaha, Nebraska. Also, they have amazing food like steak on a stone where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone where you cut off every single piece and press it into that stone and you choose how well done you want every single bite. It's Mike's Beer Bar. It's on Federal Street right across the street from PNC Park, and it's the best bar in Pittsburgh. So go there today at Mike's Beer Bar, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens. We're talking about some of their new Steelers players who are former Ravens. Now, Deshaun Elliott's a few times removed. He was with the Lions and the Dolphins, but he was also with the Ravens. And Kevin, I want you to give Pittsburgh fans a sense of just who Deshaun Elliott is, because when they look him up on YouTube, they're seeing him blow up Derrick Henry and force fumbles and make great tackles at the goal line and save touchdowns. Has he been that guy for a long time, or is that kind of a new presence that he's developed over the past few years?
Even dating back to Texas, I think Deshaun Elliott was one of those dual-wielding safeties in terms of the ability to have those big hits, but also him being a ball hawk. And I think he was actually more known for his ball hawking at Texas when he was in college. Now, with Elliott, he was essentially a strong safety at Texas, where he was roaming all around the field. And he, again, the ball production was there coming out of school. Now, I had him around a third, fourth round pick. He ended up falling to Baltimore in the sixth, which I just had no idea how that happened. And then had a minimal role his first year, but then ended up coming in. And when Earl Thomas, again, great player for the Ravens on the field, really did not work off of it for multiple different reasons. Essentially, Earl Thomas punched Chuck Clark in practice, and that was kind of the tip of the iceberg, and there was so much more that went on with that. But then when Earl Thomas was released, the Ravens had no other guys on their roster. Chuck Clark was already their strong safety, and that was that. But the Ravens said, okay, Deshaun, you're going to play free safety for us. So essentially playing a whole new position for Baltimore, and he only had about two or so weeks to learn it, because that move, that Earl Thomas move, happened very, very deep into training camp. And he developed. I mean, he was somebody that, again, started to hone his ability to hit. That Derrick Henry hit is the replay that, when you think of Deshaun Elliott in Baltimore, that's the highlight you think of. But he also has that ball hawking ability and ball hawking presence. The thing with Deshaun Elliott, though, with Baltimore was the injuries. I think a lot of people, so much potential. A lot of people loved what he could bring to the table, but we just didn't get to see it enough here in Baltimore because he always seemed to be injured. And I think that's a reason why Baltimore didn't end up bringing him back. And he ended up going to Detroit that year and then obviously Miami the next. So I think Elliott's still a really good player. If he's able to stay on the field for the Steelers this season, I think there's a lot of potential there, especially working with Minkah Fitzpatrick, both of those guys known for forcing turnovers and just being all around the field. I think you can work those two in tandem and rotate them a ton. And again, we talk about those three safety looks. Those two are going to be very involved. Fitzpatrick obviously is going to be on the field all the time for Pittsburgh. But at the end of the day, I think Elliott gives you a versatile chess piece for this defense, which I think can make a really big impact on how the Steelers play this season.
To your point about Deshaun Elliott's injuries, he suffered quite a bit, especially in 2021. He had a knee concussion, quad, finger. He had quite a few injuries. But last year did a couple, but seemed to only miss like not that much time when you look at his overall resume. And I think that's where the Steelers aren't looking for Deshaun Elliott to be the game changer. They're looking for him to just be the guy who can fly around the line of scrimmage, help against the pass underneath, and get Minkah Fitzpatrick back to being Minkah Fitzpatrick. Because too many times last year, I felt that Minkah Fitzpatrick was asked to play up in the box, was asked to come down and help with the run. And in doing that, sometimes it worked. It was great when they actually ran the ball at him. And it's like, hey, you'll want that to be the case. Minkah Fitzpatrick's a dog. He'll go get a guy. But when they don't run the ball at him, or it's the ball's not coming his way and the ball's going deep while he's not there, that's a missed opportunity to have one of the best ball hawking safeties and free, you know, center fielding free safeties in the NFL to be back there doing what he does best. And that's where I think Deshaun Elliott can help the Steelers. He only has 3 interceptions in his 5 years in the league, but he's not being brought to the Steelers to make interceptions. He's being brought to the Steelers to make tackles, to cover underneath, to make breakups here and there. He had 7 passes defense last year for the Dolphins. If he does those things, you know, kind of think back to Terrell Edmonds, but maybe like a better Terrell Edmonds, you know, a guy that wasn't a turnover machine, but could give you good hits, give you decent coverage, stay tight on receivers and running backs and tight ends, and then free up Minkah Fitzpatrick to be what he needs to be. I think that's who they're getting in Deshaun Elliott. And it also helps that he does have some ball hawking tendencies, that he is finding the ball when he's playing the run. You need those kind of guys in the middle part of your defense.
Right. Essentially, what you want to do is take the pressure as much as you can off of Minkah Fitzpatrick and make sure that he can play to his strengths. Not that he can't play up in the box, not that he can't do that stuff, but you want to have him, if you're Pittsburgh, roaming around the middle of the field and feeling out quarterbacks and trying to disrupt that timing. And Deshaun Elliott, while he also has that skill set, he has proven that, again, while the ball hawking production hasn't been there at the NFL level, not only does he have that, but the physicality that he brings as well. I think, again, health is the key factor for him. He seems to get banged up a lot, but again, you mentioned didn't miss a ton of time in Miami, just was more dinged up than anything else last season. But to me, I think that it's a really nice tandem with that, and I feel like Fitzpatrick is a player where if you can maximize his skill set, everybody else automatically gets a boost, and that would include a guy like Deshaun Elliott. So you can work those guys in tandem. I'm sure Pittsburgh will figure it out in training camp how they want to utilize a guy like Deshaun Elliott in the middle of that defense. And Patrick Queen, it's also those guys are they're fast players. Patrick Queen is a sideline to sideline linebacker. Deshaun Elliott has some speed to him as well. So you're getting faster on the defense. I think those were two really good moves for the Steelers. Both players I love when they were in Baltimore, and obviously now, again, flipping over to the other side of the rivalry here with the Steelers.
I think that's what the Steelers are going to be looking for, and how he flows with the entire secondary, because they got Joey Porter Jr. They added Dante Jackson. Now with Deshaun Elliott, they still have DeMonte KZ. And it's funny because DeMonte KZ, like, you know, he's a guy who can play in the back. He can help out there. He comes up to deliver big hits, but also illegal big hits. And that was a problem the Steelers ran into late this season. So they need a guy who doesn't, who can hit, but isn't trying to throw his whole body weight into it and doing so in ways that draw penalties and also injure other players. So if Elliott can be that guy, I think it's such a helpful tool to the Pittsburgh Steelers. The defense, they have their stars. They have T.J. Watt. They've got Alex Highsmith, Mickey Fitzpatrick, Kim Hayward sticking around. Joey Porter Jr. is looking like a strong option there. They need more role players. And I think Patrick Queen can add to the star level of players there. But they need more role players, and I think that's where Deshaun Elliott comes into play. I want to talk more about the AFC North in general with Kevin, because the AFC North is certainly changing a lot. The Bengals added a new player. The Browns added a new player. Who are the Ravens getting? We'll talk about the AFC North and how that's shaping out here on the other side of the North Shore Drive podcast right after this break here. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Back here on the Wednesday edition of the North Shore Drive podcast, it's Chris Carter here, your host, here with Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. All right, Kevin, let's look at some of the moves that we've seen across the AFC North so far. Let's start with recent ones, and we're going to talk about Trent Brown, the offensive tackle the Bengals brought in. That, to me, is a significant move. They've been trying to improve their offensive line for quite some time. It's been the biggest factor. Joe Burrow's been knocked out of it in the four seasons he's been in the NFL. He's been knocked out for half the season twice. And that's where, if you're the Bengals, you gotta find a way to fix this offensive line. And I'm sure they're gonna invest it in the draft too. But is the tackle they got, is that the guy that you think can solidify their offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's a good move. Brown was really good for New England and has been. Again, the Raiders' tenure, we're gonna forget about that because it wasn't that great for him. But obviously in New England, he was a really good player. Now you have two mammoths of human beings in both Orlando mm-hmm. Brown, who was another former Raven. I could just talk forever about former Ravens in the AFC North. But you have Orlando Brown Jr. and you have Trent Brown. Both guys are 6'8", and again, just absolutely massive. So I think Cincinnati needed this move. I haven't been a big fan of what they've done this offseason in terms of swapping out Joe Mixon for Zach Moss, losing DJ Reader and trading him out with Sheldon Rankins. But the number one thing for the Bengals has been the offensive line. I mean, I remember back when Ja'Marr Chase versus Penei Sewell was the huge debate in Cincinnati, and were they going to take Sewell? Were they going to take Chase? Obviously, Chase has worked out really well, but it all starts up front there, and it feels like the Bengals, that they've tried, right? They signed Alex Kappa, and they got Ted Karras as well, I think, but they haven't really been able to fully put it together, and it has resulted, as you mentioned, Chris, in Joe Burrow getting injured and having too much pressure put on him. So I think that this Trent Brown move is my favorite of the offseason for Cincinnati. And again, I think they really needed something because I wasn't too sure what the direction was of the franchise, especially because I just think DJ Reader is such a huge loss. And I think everybody else in the AFC North is smiling knowing that he is now in the other conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about a big Browns move that just happened. We knew they traded for Jerry Jeudy, but we had no idea for how much they were going to pay him. And they just signed him to a big $50+ million extension for 3 years, $41 million guaranteed. And frankly, Kevin, I don't get it. I don't see what the heck they're doing there when you got a draft class. Granted, they don't have a first round draft pick, but there's plenty of good, great receivers. I think you get in this year's second round, but like you got all these receivers coming out and then you pay big bucks to Jerry Jeudy, never had 1,000 yards receiving Jerry Jeudy, never had more than 6 touchdowns in a season Jerry Jeudy. I think that's an overpay. Am I missing something here?
No, I think you're not missing a thing. I think that this, it's not a move that makes a ton of sense. If I had to come up with an explanation, if I had to kind of justify it, I would say that I guess they're trying to get ahead of what the receiver market is continuing to be, which is, I mean, Gabe Davis getting almost 15 per season and all these other players. Now, you can't justify it with Jeudy, though, because you mentioned it. Hasn't had an 1,000-yard season. We've seen the struggles with the drops. He hasn't been available at some points as well. I mean, maybe it was a condition of the trade where the Browns say, hey, Jerry, we're going to bring you in, and we're also going to sign you to an extension off of that. So it was a contingent on that whole thing. I don't know, but I mean, Jeudy has potential, but you're paying essentially $60 million for potential, which I think is very much so. I think there's a limit you can put on potential in terms of how much money you want to spend on it. Maybe he balls out with Cleveland and maybe he proves everybody wrong. But to me, based off of his current production and what we've currently seen, this is essentially them paying for the future in what it can potentially be and not paying for who Jerry Jeudy is at this moment, which, again, he's been in the league for a couple of years now. He's not a rookie or a second-year player anymore. So, exactly, you're seeing who he is a little bit, not saying there's still no room for growth. There is, but at the same time, that's a lot of money for a player who hasn't had a ton of NFL production to this point.
He hasn't. And certainly you could point to the quarterback play and, you know, offensive systems just not really working in his favor. And sure, that could be an issue. But, you know, I look at that and I just think, man, like, that's a lot of money to be putting down on a guy that I'm not sure about. And just, you know, especially, again, when you can draft guys, you can sign. I mean, the Steelers, they're looking at Mike Williams right now. They're not going to pay him nearly what they're paying Jerry Jeudy. And I think that could be an equivalent type of talent guy that you bring into your organization. So I just... Okay, I guess if the Cleveland Browns, I mean, hey, that front office has made a lot of good moves of late. Maybe this is another one. We just don't know it yet, and they see something that none of us do. But let's get to the Ravens, too, the team that you cover. The Ravens went and got Derrick Henry. Now, Matt Ebuike keeping him was a huge deal, too. But I want to focus on Henry because there's some out there that think that Derrick Henry with Lamar Jackson – definitely a lethal duo in the backfield together. But there's some out there who think that adding Derrick Henry to a team that already runs the ball the best in the NFL when they need to improve the pass game, that's a misstep. Where are you at on your thoughts on that, on just the addition of Derrick Henry and what it'll do for the rest of the offense?
Yeah, I personally think it was a good move for the Ravens. Now, again, we can have the conversations about how devalued the running back position is and how much money you should be investing in a running back in today's day and age of NFL football. But I think when you look at the other running back contracts that players got around the league this free agency cycle, Saquon Barkley got around $13 million per season, just base, 13 per season. Josh Jacobs got 12. But then you look to Tony Pollard, who got $8 million. DeAndre Swift got $8 million. Derrick Henry also got $8 million. It was a two-year, $16 million deal. If you can get Derrick Henry for the same price you're getting Tony Pollard and DeAndre Swift for, who I think are still fine players, but Derrick Henry, I think, is worlds above those two right now, I think that's fine. And I definitely hear people who are saying, well, why would you add a running back to an already great rushing attack when you were totally fine with Gus Edwards? You were totally fine with J.K. Dobbins. To me, I think even though the Ravens, that was their strength and will continue to be their strength, that doesn't mean you can't improve upon it, even if it already is the best. There is still a ceiling they haven't even reached yet, even though they did have the best rushing attack in football and have had one of the best rushing attacks really ever since Lamar Jackson took over. Essentially, it's raising your floor and it's raising your ceiling. And now the question I wonder, at least for NFL defenses, is with Lamar Jackson before, with the Edwards and the Dobbins and all that, it was, well, we're going to have to defend both guys, but defenses were probably leaning more towards Lamar because they understood that he was the most dynamic player with the ball in his hands by a wide margin. Now you add in Derrick Henry, and while Lamar is probably still the most dynamic player with the ball in his hands, you now have to account for this bruising monster running back. And what do you do if you're a defense in terms of, well, we can either put in some heavy personnel to try to stop Derrick Henry and bring him down, but then you lose the speed if Lamar Jackson gets the ball, and vice versa. With Lamar Jackson, you bring in that light personnel to try to stop him, guys that can get sideline to sideline and try to bring him down. Right. Well, one-on-one with Derrick Henry, that's probably not going to go super well. So it's going to be about defenses finding balance, but I do view it as kind of a yin and a yang situation between Lamar and Derrick Henry with how they can play off of each other in this offense. And again, if the running game is successful and teams have to start stacking that box up, it opens up the play action game and the rest of the offense as well for guys like Zay Flowers and whoever else they bring in, Rashad Bateman. So I do think it's a move that the Ravens could have, I guess, done without, but them adding Derrick Henry, and I still think is a quality one because it does raise your floor and your ceiling in the run game, even though it was already so good.
I actually agree with this. I hear the people that are saying they could have spent that money on a wide receiver, they could have done this, but Derrick Henry can calm down so much in your offense. It can also make it so that Lamar Jackson doesn't have to run as nearly as much. The Ravens have been getting over with guys like Gus Edwards for the past several years. You add Derrick Henry there, that's a problem. I think that's where that's where I'm at on the Ravens additions here. But in the AFC North, there's still a lot of moves to be made. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let people know they can find you, follow you, and get more of your work.
Yeah, you can find me over at Locked On Ravens, obviously. We have 5 days a week Ravens content. over there. So obviously, just like Chris over at Locked On Steelers, you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, also on YouTube in video form as well. I'm also writing over at the Ravens Wire, so more Ravens content over there, and also working with the Ryan Ripken Show now, talking Ravens, talking Orioles. Baseball season coming up now. It's another exciting sports season getting underway. So tons of sports to me, Chris. I appreciate you having me on here.
Absolutely. I'm Chris Carter of the North Shore Drive podcast. Find me here every day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, as well as other days for our pitch shows that we do. And you can get all of the action on the North Shore Drive podcast. But remember, we have daily content that comes out from all of our writers. We've got plenty of Papyrus writers. Noah Hiles is moving over to that beat. Jason Mackey and Andrew Destin holding it down there. We can also be finishing out the Penn season. We got March Madness covered. Abby Schnabel's going to Nebraska to cover the Duquesne Dukes. It's a whole lot to talk about here for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette with our really big team. Stay here for all those episodes. Thanks again for tuning into the North Shore Drive podcast. I'll see you Friday when we're wrapping up the week. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.